This CKNW podcast is brought to you by Destination Toyota in Burnaby. Open all the time at burnabytoyota.ca. As promised on Sports Talk, time to present our weekly minor hockey talk. Our insider all year has been Derek Popke, Derek underscore Popke on Twitter. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dan.
We had somebody from the Rick Hansen Institute, just tremendous reaction from what I got. How about you?
Yeah, it was great to have Bill Bearable on, the CEO there from the Rick Hansen Institute, talking about their Angus Reid poll on whether or not body checking belongs at the peewee level in
hockey.
What
did you hear after that?
Well, I heard that some parents of, especially kids, parents and coaches of kids of that age, they were kind of sitting on the fence. You know, they kind of had the attitude of, well, my kid has to learn it going into Bantam anyways, or, you know, a part of them was like, wow, you know, the brain's not fully developed. If my kid gets popped, maybe this is a bit too early for them to be taking hits. They really sat on the fence. And then after hearing our show, I think a lot of parents and a lot of minor hockey coaches, it kind of swayed them into, you know, making a decision that, you know what, maybe this doesn't belong at the peewee level hockey. And I think one of the big things that Bill was getting into is, you know, there's just as many injuries in Bantam hockey with body checking as there is in peewee hockey. Bill stated that the stats were 9,000 kids throughout Canada getting hurt through body checking, through concussions in peewee hockey. And, you know, even though there's just as many injuries in Bantam, I believe in his point is, if there's just as many, then why expose these kids to risk at the age of 11 and 12 years old? Why not delay it, save some injuries, get them to learn the game more, educate them about the game, educate them on how to safely give a hit, safely how to receive a hit, learn positioning better, how to protect themselves, the danger zone against the boards. And, you know, now when they enter Bantam hockey and the size discrepancy between players is maybe a bit more level, we'll have less injuries moving forward in the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, it made total sense to me. In fact, I really have my fingers crossed it's going to make total sense to the movers and shakers when they get together in June and actually have a decision to be made here in British Columbia.
Yeah, and you know, I have friends that have kids that are a little younger right now, 3, 4, 5 years old, and, you know, they listen to the show too, and their feedback was, that's exactly why I'm not putting my kid in minor hockey.
Wow.
And you know, I have to say, well, hold on. This is why we need to make rule changes. And, you know, hitting in peewee hockey never used to be allowed in BC. Then it was brought in and, hey, maybe we have to take it out again. And just like the NHL, they have to make rules to keep the game moving forward and keep the game safer. So does minor hockey. They have to make changes along the way too, because we want as many kids in Canada to be exposed to this great game.
We have a special guest coming up. We'll tell you who he is in just a couple of minutes. It's a time of year, of course, where the club teams have kind of finished. They've wrapped up their banner weekend tournaments have been taking place. And now a lot of people getting ready for spring hockey.
Yeah, spring hockey is going to be big as usual, and it keeps growing more and more teams. But, you know, just going back to the banner weekend and stuff, I was fortunate enough to be at the rink and seeing these kids win these banners, whether it was house hockey or rep hockey. And, you know, it just triggered in me when we had Glenn Hamlin, the assistant coach of the Vancouver Giants, on, when he stated on Minor Hockey Talk that, you know, in a 3-3 game in the third period, yeah, it, whether the kid's playing A1 or house, it doesn't matter to the kid and it doesn't matter to the parent, that they want to win just as bad. And, you know, it means just as much to the player at any level. When you saw these kids, whether they're winning a house banner or whether they're winning the provincial championship or the Final Four championship, the smiles are just as big ear to ear.
Mm, that's great. And as it pertains to spring hockey, I wonder how many kids keep playing, or do they shut her down for the summer now? I mean, half the kids who are registered around, would that be your ballpark figure as to how many percentage-wise keep going into spring hockey?
Yeah, I recently heard this dad at the rink. He coaches a team, and he was saying he was trying to register his son's 8-year-old team in a tournament, and there's a 28-team list, a waiting list to get into this tournament of 8-year-olds. So spring hockey is continuing to grow. And, you know, that's a whole other topic, because one of the main reasons why, Dan, spring hockey started was it was a way to allow kids to play hockey with their friends that maybe play in other catchment areas. So there's no boundaries. Anyone can play on your team. So spring hockey started where maybe a kid from Richmond can play with a kid in Vancouver. Now, moving into minor hockey out in Saskatchewan, this is the way it's set up. There is no catchment areas. You can play wherever you want.
What, during the
Regular season?
Wow.
So is this a way that minor hockey might move here in BC?
Interesting.
I highly doubt it, but it would be interesting to maybe level the playing field against private clubs.
Mm.
I mean, it's something to think about. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but that was really the why spring hockey started and the reason behind it.
What you will not tell me is there'll be a six-year-old draft and free agency for them. That's not happening.
My question is how long is it going to be until we have minor hockey kids signing player contracts? Or, it might start in spring hockey, because one thing you're going to learn quickly as a hockey parent is there's no loyalty in hockey. And there's no loyalty through parents. There's no loyalty through kids. And the only reason I'm saying that is because parents want the best for their kids. So if a better team comes along with a better coach, most likely they're going to move on. Just like, when I was in the agent business as well, even at the NHL level and professional player level, there's absolutely no loyalty. It's who can give me the best deal. And whether you've been with that agent for 5 years or that agent helped get you drafted or whatever, I mean, players can switch if someone's going to give them a lower deal. So how far are we away? I mean, we talk about minor hockey turning into a business. Maybe that's the next step in a business where kids are starting to sign contracts. I mean, we laugh now, Dan.
Yeah.
We really do. But we would have we were laughing 8-9 years ago saying that kids would play hockey into June. Well, now they're playing hockey into June. And then we started to laugh saying, well, minor hockey associations would have paid coaches. Well, now they all have paid coaches.
True.
So things keep evolving, and where it's going to stop, who knows? But hopefully, it's for the betterment of the kids and betterment of the game. And with our guest tonight, Brent Sutter, and the recent article that came out with him, it's going to be interesting to get his point of view on all this.
And that article was written in the Edmonton Journal, and it was headlined, Wanted for NHL, All Hockey, True Athletes. WHL coach Brent Sutter says kids who focused on hockey year-round are stunting their development. We'll get to Brent on the other side of the break. Sports Talk will continue our minor hockey talk segment for this week right after this. Welcome back to Sports Talk. As we mention every week, we present our minor hockey segment with our insider, Derek Popke. We are pleased now to welcome, in fact, he's been on our show a few times in the past, but not for a little while. He's the president and the head coach, the GM of the Red Deer Rebels, Brent Sutter from the Western Hockey League, joining us from Central Alberta tonight. Hello, Brent.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. Well, Derek is in studio, and we tracked you down today because of that story in the Edmonton Journal. We're very intrigued about how you mentioned hockey year-round is stunting development of players. So in your opinion, is chasing the dream kids playing too much hockey, Brent?
Well, I think my point to that was the fact that, these kids are playing so much of it, and there's so much hockey involved through the summer or through the winter with practices and everything like that, and they're doing it again in all spring and into the summer months. It's basically become an 11-month sport now. And, and kids now, they they're just not as athletic as they used to be. Those are facts. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and deny that. It's the truth. And, kids, a few years ago played soccer in baseball in the spring and soccer in the fall and in the summer months they did other things too, but now it has become 11-month thing now, and a lot of these programs that are being run they're expensive programs, and yet it's not, at the end of the day, those kids, there's a rarity where you get the Sidney Crosbys and the Malkins and those types of players where they're special players. But, you know, more often than not, the kids that eventually catch up to those kids by the time they're 17, 18 years of age. And at the end of the day, the kids that are the true athletes, they really are the ones that seem to progress quicker at that age and develop more. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's what I find with it is that when you go watch games at the Pee Wee level, even at the Atom level, you know, and somewhat in the Bantam level, it's certainly focused. A lot of focusing is on winning, and we, you know, we need to look at the skill side of it, the skating side of it. You know, I'm a believer in this. That you know, I don't have an issue with kids playing, you know, taking skating schools or skills, doing skills things during the summer with it, but not all summer long. The competitiveness side of it for 3-4 months of the year should be taken out of it, and yet you'd still want to see kids, if they wish to do so, to continue to enhance their development through skills and, you know, skating and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
But it's just my opinion, and I've said that before. That's what I feel like. But, you know what, after that story came out, I talked about it on the radio, and it got written in the journal. I had numerous text messages and phone calls from people at the higher level that, you know, they said, you know, it was about time someone spoke out about it. And my response with it is that, you know, there needs to be more focus put in on that. And you know, that's, you know, kids nowadays aren't as athletic as they used to be. And you look at hockey players, you know, they're very robotic. If they're not in a certain place in a certain area of the ice, it's because they've been taught so much system, instead of just playing, going out and playing river hockey. Like, you know, you look nowadays, how many people do you see out on the sloughs or on the rivers or on the creeks playing hockey? Now, no one does it anymore.
Or even out here, nobody plays on the road anymore. I mean, that's another thing. Derek, go ahead.
I
have a few here, too. Go
ahead. Yeah, Brent. Now, Brent, you coached, obviously, as our listeners know, many years in the WHL, and then you went on to coach the New Jersey Devils and the Calgary Flames. Once you came back, Brent, to the Western League and started working with junior level age players again, was there something that made you realize that the landscape of a junior hockey player has changed since your first time with coaching at the junior level?
No question. It's, you know, I started noticing it before I left.
What stands out, Brent?
What's that?
What stands out?
Skill sets. Hockey sense. Street smarts, you know, just being able to, you know, deal with adversity in games, being able to figure things out, you know, on and making those decisions quickly on the ice, or knowing, understanding the, you know, the mistakes, or, you know, and just being able to react to it without having to be so much video showing to you to really show you. And, like, honest to God, like, it's night and day. And and yet, you know, I noticed it even at the NHL level with some younger players coming out of junior, and depending on what programs they came out of, and when you talk to a player and ask them, you know, if he'd been involved in baseball or soccer, and they said no, and then you talk to someone that said, yeah, this is what I always did. They picked up on things quicker. They were more teachable, more coachable, and yet less time needed to be spent with them because they got everything quicker.
Right.
And it doesn't, I'm not saying that kids that do this aren't smart people, but just when it comes to the game of hockey, it's different.
So for parents listening out there, we all want our kids to maybe have the dream of one day playing in the NHL. The advice really is, don't focus too much on building a hockey player. Build an all around athlete, and that way, you know, their dreams have a better chance of, you know, maybe coming true one day as a professional hockey player or junior hockey player.
Well, I guess the next question is, whose dream are you fulfilling?
Yeah, good point.
You know, and I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah,
you know, kids need to be kids still. You know, kids need to be able to mature and go through all these things. And, you know, and trust me, when you get to 17, 18, 19 years of age, your life is starting to change. And you're starting to become an adult. You got to start making decisions, you know, and having friends outside the game is a good thing. You know, and seeing how they deal with stuff or how their families deal with things. And, you know, when you're around a hockey atmosphere and you're around people, that's all they live is hockey. That's all you know. But it doesn't mean you're better at it.
Right.
You know, and it really doesn't. I mean, if you, you know, trust me, and I've said this, difference between a true athlete and a hockey player is different. There's true athletes that are great players, great in everything they do. They're good at baseball. They're good at soccer. Hockey just is something natural for them.
Right.
You know, it's just something that just flows with them. But someone that's just, you know, as I said, if you look at a hockey player, go look at a player that's an athlete playing hockey, it's they're two different type of players.
You know, Brent, one of the things you said in that Edmonton Journal, I mean, there's so many great quotes in there, and I direct our listeners to go to the Jason Greger story in the Edmonton Journal, but you talked about what happens with a lot of kids now who play hockey year-round is the wear-out factor, almost a burnout factor, and you think, wow, that's kind of bizarre because they're so young, but you say the fire in their bellies by the time they're 19 or 20 or 21 isn't the same as when they were 12 because they've been doing it too many months of the year.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, and I, you know, and it's very obvious, you know, and you know, and the, one of the biggest questions that scouts have is, does he have the passion?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does he have the passion still 18, 19 years of age? Does he still have the fire with him? And part of that is because of that. Like, they never used to talk about that 15, 20 years ago, you know, and, but nowadays when we go look at players, and I've talked to our own scouting staff about this in Red Deer, is that when you find out, does the kid play baseball? Because you know what? We need to know those things, because if that player's coming to our program and all he's ever done is play hockey, we're coaching him differently than we are coaching a true athlete.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gary.
And it's goes hand in hand. And, you know, and these kids do get wore out. And, you know, and yeah, like I said, after that article, like, I didn't expect it. I got asked to do the interview, and I told him my thoughts, told him what I feel, and what I see, and then all of a sudden it ran, and all of a sudden getting all these phone calls and getting text messages from all these people. Like, if you call Wayne Gretzky about it, you know, and I'm certainly not Wayne Gretzky, believe me, Wayne would be telling me the same thing.
Yeah.
But no one ever talks about it.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did.
You know, and that's it. I got asked the questions and I answered them truthfully. And yet, you know, Wayne Gretzky, you look at the pictures back when Wayne Gretzky was young. He played hockey, but Wayne Gretzky was a great ball player.
Mm-hmm. Did he not, Derek, did Wayne play lacrosse too? Or?
And he was a good lacrosse player and he was a good ball player.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yet, how did he learn the game? He learned the game in his backyard.
Yeah. Like, I know,
but
too.
We don't do that anymore, right? Like, you don't see that anymore. You don't see kids like
that. No, those days are gone.
Roads, you know, and so everything is so structured now, right? Everything is so structured and so. Players become so robotic because of the structure. But do kids really need that? You know, I understand when you get to Bantam, it becomes a little more competitive, and especially when you get to the AAA levels and you get to the midget level and stuff like that. And obviously when you get to junior hockey, it's, you know, now you're pushing to get to the next level. And so things do get very competitive, and it does become a little different about winning and losing. But the development period from such a young age up to those age limits, I think we can do better at. And part of that doing better at is allow these kids to be baseball players, allow these kids to do other things. And I know my own son, for an example. He's playing in the National Hockey League, and I'm just using him as an example. Like many other players, he did not want to play summer hockey. He did not want to play spring hockey. He wanted to play soccer. He wanted to play ball. Well, you know what? He was the sixth pick overall in the Western Hockey League Bantam draft. He was the third, what was left pick of National Hockey League NHL draft. It didn't make him any worse off. Actually, what he does, he's such a good athlete. He can adjust to anything.
Right.
And that's the whole thing with it is that, and you see it. You see it in players. Like, it's so noticeable. And yet, I guess I've talked about it and mentioned a few things about it, and now it's getting going out there. But I truly believe that more and more needs to be more and more research put into that.
Brent, I want to just elaborate on that a bit with you is, you know, especially now, like let's take the Red Deer Rebels, for instance, or, you know, junior level players age 16 to 20 years old. I mean, we used to talk about that skating is the number one skill in hockey. If you can't skate, you can't play. With the pace of the game now, like these kids, it's almost like the knowledge and the thinking almost becomes equal as their skating ability, and the way that they're going to be able to think the game faster in different situations is probably by playing different sports growing up, being in, you know, facing adversity and stuff by growing up by playing different sports. Would you agree on that?
Absolutely. You know, the hockey, the intelligence part of the game doesn't just come by playing the game. It comes from everything else you do. It's being able to react to things that happen quickly. The adversity that's involved as you get into higher levels, being able to be really strong mentally. And people that are is because they've gone through all these different things, right? They've played baseball. They've had other coaches, whether it's in baseball or cross or whatever it may be, soccer. And they've had other people that they in their own families have associated with in other sports and stuff. And so you get a good feel for it all. And you just seem to handle things differently and handle things differently, I guess. I don't know how to explain it, but
yeah.
it's so true. And yet, don't get me wrong, there's a lot, there's good players out there that have played basically hockey, but they're not the most skilled players, and they're not the most hockey intelligent players.
Well, you would know, Brent, even from kids on your team or, you know, players in the National Hockey League, those best players, you can throw them a ping pong racket, a golf club, a tennis racket, and they're going to be able, whether they've played it before or not, they're gonna succeed at that sport. I mean, we see it all the time.
Well, guys, you know, these teams now, these teams play kick soccer balls around and stuff before games and stuff like that.
Yeah,
the guys that are out there doing it, and they're your best athletes on the team. It's amazing what they're like doing it, and those guys because they played those, and a lot of it is your European players.
Mm-hmm. You can almost scout that way now. Take a prospect out to the tennis court, or take a prospect out to the golf course, and if he succeeds at that sport, you know there's a pretty good chance he's going to be there in the end for you on your hockey club.
And no question, you know, it's just athletes. You know, back then, there's quite a few people who were just good athletes. Nowadays, how many can look back and say how many people are actually really good athletes now?
Right.
You know, that are playing the game, and the game is so structured now, and so you know, it's so robotic and
systems.
Everything is so talking about systems, and you know, and it's you know, and I'm just gonna I just heard a story the other day that some six-year-old parents or parents of six-year-olds want to start a summer league for six-year-olds.
Unreal.
Because they think their kids are so much better than other six-year-olds, and they want to start a summer league so they can play at a higher competitiveness, and they're 6 years old.
It's unbelievable.
Well, my boy is 6 years old, and I can tell you that's not happening in my but he loves the game. But, you know, you've said robotic about six times, and I keep nodding my head and going, wow, how do you get that out of them if it becomes so robotic? That's a challenge that coaches now have when they get, you know, at higher levels. I have to wrap up here in about 90 seconds. I also wanted to congratulate you on your Red Deer team this year, 39 wins, and you're in the playoffs, of course. You'll have home ice in the first round, and so I presume you're having a good time there in Red Deer?
Well, you know, when I unfortunately it wasn't the way I would have liked to see it happen as far as having to remove my coach in November, but, you know, at that time where our team wasn't where it needed to be, our emotional level in the game wasn't where it needed to be. We were really struggling at home, And, you know, you just, that's when you've been around the game, you need to make a change. And you know, and yet we end up doing it. And I remember getting some calls from reporters and stuff like that back then saying, well, you know, why? I mean, this is where you're, this is where everyone projected your team to be. And it kind of ticked me off. I was like, no, I project this team to be a lot better than this. And, and we need to start getting this program back to where it needs to be. And there needs to be a standard set that's, that you can't accept being just average. And we've worked on that and the kids have bought into it and we've made improvements. And at the end of the day, you always, as a coach or management or any organization, you evaluate your players in the season to see if you got the maximum of their potential out of them. And that's our goal here. And where it gets us to, I don't know. But, you know, we accomplished one of our goals. We wanted to get into the top four seeds, and we did that. And yet no one gave us a chance in November. But we've accomplished that, and we're going to keep pushing. And wherever we get to, that's where we get to. But, you know, we're going to do everything we can to continue to play as long as we can.
Well, hats off to you on that, and hopefully we'll see you along the trail in the playoffs here. But most of all, thanks so much, Brent, for coming on here. I'm sure have parents around our province, as we're heard around British Columbia, are nodding their head and saying, you know, let's rethink this a little bit if my son needs to play that many months a year.
They're probably all upset with me.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not all of them. Thanks, Brent. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Brent.
All right. The head coach, the president, the general manager, the owner of the Red Deer Rebels, that is Brent Sutter. That was good. We'll be right back. We're back on our minor hockey talk segment for this week. Derek Popke in our studio. And Derek, you were telling me, and this is why we're about to welcome Emily Millen to the program. We know the Canucks recently hired yoga instructors. Yoga in hockey is starting to explode.
Yeah, it's becoming a real trend that NHL players and junior players are starting to add yoga into their training routine throughout the season and definitely in the summer as well.
Emily Millen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Well, how much is it exploding in hockey? I mean, yoga's your deal for sure, but from a hockey standpoint, what are you seeing?
Well, I already know a lot of my yoga teacher colleagues have got into working with hockey teams down to the NHL, to privates, to teaching them at the studio. So it's definitely exploding. There's a lot more talk around yoga and hockey as good fit for each other.
Why is that?
Oh, lots of reasons. Well, yoga is used to kind of bring together the breath, the body. It's a sequence of postures synchronized with the breath, which builds a lot of strength, a lot of balance, a lot of flexibility. And hockey players tend to really just work on their legs. Their quads are tight, their groins are tight, hamstrings are tight. So yoga is an all-around, all-body workout. So it not only stretches out the legs, but the upper body. And it also brings about flexibility, which is great because if you're flexible, then you're less prone to injury.
We mentioned the Canucks taking part in a yoga training session recently, and I know in the Western Hockey League, the Saskatoon Blades, who are featured all season long on a Sportsnet special, watching one of those documentaries that they had, they've had their players with yoga. Why has hockey been sort of, I mean, it makes so much sense what you just said, Emily, about flexibility and such. But hockey seems to be a Johnny come lately in terms of adopting yoga.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, yoga is seen, especially as jocks looking at yoga as kind of like a passive kind of yoga workout for hippies, where it's, you know, meditation and chanting and stuff like that. There is a big element of that, but there's also a big physical element of it, and it kind of translates to the mind and just feeling really good all around, body, mind, spirit. So you can start with the body, but it will kind of leak into how you feel mentally and emotionally as well.
Now I'm just going to rattle off a few names here, Dan and Emily. Ryan Getzlaff, Joffrey Lupo, Jonathan Toews, Joe Thornton, and Paul Bissonnette, all NHL players that have recently added yoga into their training routine. Now, Emily, I know that your brother plays junior hockey out in Ontario, and you had an opportunity to work with his junior team. Now, I imagine that when the team first walked into the yoga studio, their attitude was a lot different when they walked in than when they walked out of the yoga studio.
Yeah, it was really fun. They actually walked in kind of cocky and overly confident and thinking that they, you know, were in for like a smooth ride. And then I saw them talking to each other halfway through. I think we're in the core section of it, like whispering, man, this is so hard. This is so hard. They're sweating buckets. And by the end of it, they were just down for the count in Shavasana, which is basically kind of like nap time. They weren't moving at all. Half of them are sleeping, and I think they left just kind of in a daze. We call that the yoga haze.
I like the nap time part of that. What were you saying, Derek?
Yeah, I think the nap time part happens in the final 10 minutes.
I'm all for that part. That's like my audience every night, around about a little bit earlier some nights.
Now, I know with hockey, Emily, with skating, we use the same repetitive motions all the time. And what this does is it actually creates a lot of imbalances in the body of a hockey player. So yoga, I imagine, I mean, you can let our listeners know, it can help attack those imbalances, correct?
Yeah, correct. So through various postures, you hold them for a long period of time, so you're really tackling the stiffness in the groins, especially in the thighs. So it's an all-body workout, and it really brings you back into optimal alignment because hockey players are doing the same motion over and over and over and really overly working certain parts of the body. It can throw off your alignment. So yoga just brings you back into your optimal blueprint, which actually really does help with your stress levels, with any pain, chronic pain. It clears out energy blockage. It even is proven to help with depression, anxiety, and also insomnia.
Emily Millen is with us, owner of Emily Millen Yoga. You can see her website, emilymillenyoga.com. The Millen name is well known. I saw your dad play as an NHL goalie. Did you?
I was very little. I remember playing games up in the stands. So no,
that little, huh? Where were you born?
I was actually born in Canada, but we're living in St. Louis at the time. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he traveled a little bit with his job. Now, what does he think of this whole yoga trend? Had somebody introduced it to Greg Millen, the goalie? Although goalies need to be flexible, I bet he wishes years ago he might have.
Yeah, back in the old days, I don't think they were encouraged to stretch as much as they do now. And because of it, unfortunately, he has a lot of injuries. He has chronic back pain, and he's really stiff. So he really, really supports it. And we also figure skated as when we were little. So he really encouraged finding balance in your competitive sport, incorporating other types of movement, you know, dance, yoga, whatever it was. But he does yoga with me. He swears a lot, but I think he notices a big difference when he gets up and leaves the mat. I think he feels pretty good.
And you're based out of here, Emily?
Yeah, I'm based out of Vancouver. I teach around the city with Y Yoga, Semper Viva, and Unity Yoga, as well as I do privates out of my house as well.
Nice.
Emily, there's a lot of different styles of yoga out there. What type of classes would be best for hockey players?
Well, hockey players want to get a workout, keeps them interested, allows them to sweat. But you also want to go to a class where they're going to get deep into the muscles and the tissues. So hatha yoga is a really good way to start. It's a little bit slower. It's great for beginners.
H-A-T-H-A, hatha, correct?
H-A-T-H-A.
Okay. Hatha. Yes. Hatha yoga.
Sorry, keep going.
Hatha, yeah. And then once you kind of master hatha yoga, I recommend going up to either power yoga or vinyasa yoga. It's a little bit more vigorous. It's a little bit more playful too. It's a lot of kind of like upbeat music and a little bit more flow of movement through the body.
What type of class would be best for an aging talk show host?
Shavasana all the way through.
It can't be hatha, can it? What age do hockey players, like, I mean, this is minor hockey talk. I don't imagine there's too many 6, 7, 8-year-olds doing yoga, but maybe I'm wrong. Tell me what age is a good time to start as we, you know, sort of target in on hockey here.
Yeah. Well, you can start yoga at any age. I mean, there's yoga for kids where yoga is introduced to infants, like 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, but I think 8, 9, 10 is a great age. I've taught a lot of teenagers. I think I see a lot of kids starting around 13, 14, 15 is a good age because you have the attention span to sit for an hour and be still. When you're younger, you know, 6, 7, you might not keep their attention for that long. So older, I think, is better in the teens.
Now, Daniel Sedin's, Dan and Emily, Daniel Sedin's feedback on the yoga session that the Canucks did was that it really let him clear his mind from the pressures of the game. Now, Emily, yoga is not just physical. Like, this can also be a good mental kind of cleanse for competitive hockey players.
Yeah, definitely. Yoga focuses a lot on the breath. And if you're focusing, meditating on the breath, you're going to be really present. You're going to remain focused regardless of what's going on around you. For example, in yoga, you practice this because you're pushed through these postures and you're kind of forced to sit through uncomfortable sensations and sometimes discomfort. And you have to just keep your eye on your breath and stay calm. So if you're playing a game and you have all these outside distractions as well, you're being yelled at by your coach, there's the fans yelling at you, you're losing, you're tired, whatever it is, you can easily access that place of stillness and calm and almost meditation as you're moving through the game. And also it's just a way to check out of your busy schedule and to spend an hour with yourself and to, I call it the weather report, just to check in with yourself and your life. And guaranteed, you always leave feeling really connected and really clear and present and just really ready to tackle your game or the rest of your day or whatever is going on for you.
All about the breathing.
All about the breathing. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Emily, thank you very much. I'm very intrigued by this. And you know, obviously the Canucks have brought it to the forefront in our market here. But it appears to be a trend that will, I believe, just for that whole area of flexibility as much as anything. And I got to believe off-season, too, especially for players, you know, trying to stay in shape. There's not much downtime right now. Got to believe that if you've got guys like Getzlaff and Lupul and Taves and Thorntons around this NHL doing it, that you're going to have more and more. So I want to appreciate or thank you, and I appreciate very much you joining us here, Emily, and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
The owner of Emily Millen Yoga, and that's emilymillenyoga.com is her website, joining us on Minor Hockey Talk. We'll be right back.